we don't start, they're not going to come in. Clearly, we have a lot of people out there who wanted to talk to our members. So let's begin. Good morning. We are delighted to be here today and just want to make sure that members have all the information they need. I don't have the bill with me.
Okay, here we go. Organize here, Mr. Clausen.
Yeah. A lot of paperwork to do.
Thank you.
To be here for the.
Yeah, okay.
Did you get a staple?
Sounds good.
I have my own.
Members, for those who are here, I would like to start by making sure that you do have in front of you a list that Mr. Kelly put together for you. And basically what that list does is it gives you, provides you a reminder of the bills that have been incorporated into the omnibus bill, and it gives you the number, it gives you the author, so that as we review the language, we remember where those provisions came from. So I hope you have that. In case you have questions, we're going to attempt to ask the authors to respond to questions. Also, I want members to know we are not going to take new testimony because we have heard these bills before. And so there is no reason for new testimony. But we will have access to experts who are in this room who may need to answer a question that we don't have an answer for. So we really appreciate that we have a lot of knowledgeable people here in the room. So that if we have a question about a provision and we are not able to remember between our staff, the department's staff, and some of the individuals who helped us prepare this language could help us review this. So the first thing that I'm going to ask is if members are attempting to amend this bill this afternoon, and if you have prepared your amendments, and if you have provided those amendments to the staff so that they can be ready to provide those copies to all of you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Sarah Chamberlain.
We do have some amendments. Have you got them, Council?
Okay. Fantastic. So I just want to have a sense of how to time myself and make sure some of us have higher ed, a lot of us in this committee, and then others have transportation, I believe, or
higher ed.
Higher ed.
Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment.
Senator Clausen, okay.
A
you have an oral amendment?
Oral
okay.
amendment.
So you do have an oral amendment, and let me just make sense of what the staff has been able to put together. And then we will proceed and try to just create our schedule based on that. So what do we have, Ms. Bush?
A lot?
Oh, okay. No, I just want to have a sense. So, like, more than 10?
Yeah,
more than 10. Could you tell me how many so that I can... So, members, we have 14 amendments, an oral amendment. Not all members are here, and I don't know if we have some oral amendments from the members that are not here. So what I'm going to do is begin to proceed. I don't know, Ms. Butler, do we have them? We don't have them organized by issue, right?
No,
okay.
By number.
So, members, if... Since we have a brief review yesterday, I believe that we can proceed to simply look into the amendments and then find that specific language in this bill. And then I am going to ask for your patience. If we have an amendment to a bill and that member obviously is not here. Some of them are not in our committee, like Senator Hayden is not here, and others. But we have co-authors here so that they can help with that process. And if one of us is an author of that particular bill that we will have an amendment for, and that member is presenting another committee, we are going to have, we're going to make every effort to have that member present here, because this is a very important issue for that member who brought that to us, and we had a lot of conversations about those provisions already. So, Ms. Butler, why don't we start the conversation with those provisions that have been brought to us as perhaps new ideas or different ideas. So let's look at the amendments. Yeah, just bring the pile. I don't know what else.
You want to change
somebody has to offer it.
Yeah.
Okay,
Madam
so
Chair.
Let's start with Senator Dahl.
I'd like to offer the A5 amendment.
So we will start with the A5 amendment. Let's give it an order, just so that I want you to be ready.
Don't we have to offer the A3 first?
I do want to warn the next person.
Oh, that's
okay, let's start with the A5 amendments. Senator Doss, bring us to the provision in the bill.
Yep.
So this is for everyone. Please, as you...
Thank you.
Senator Peterson, just go ahead and ask me the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we need to just procedurally offer the A3 delete all before we take up the other amendments?
We did that yesterday.
Did we do it yesterday? Oh, okay.
Right. So we did that yesterday, but we didn't take any actions on it.
Okay.
We just presented it and introduced that, correct? Sorry. Thank you, Senator Peterson.
Yeah.
So yesterday we did introduce the amendment, and it's on record. Or do we need to introduce it again, or we just did an overview without introducing it?
Madam Chair, members, we just did an overview of the delete all for 978. We didn't take any action.
Okay. So just for the record, let's put a motion to move the A3 amendment. Senator Johnson.
I would make that motion.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. So Senator Johnson moves the A3 amendment. Any questions? All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The A3 is before you. On the A3 amendment, we will entertain now the A5 amendment.
Madam Chair, this was just brought to me by some folks in the audience, and it's just a technical change. I'm looking at page 25 on the 25 on the bill, specifically line 25 or page 25, line 7. And we're just deleting nationally recognized vendor. They just had some concerns that might be too restrictive in terms when they go out to get bids on who might be eligible to provide this test, this assessment. So it's just a technical change by removing with a nationally recognized vendor.
So that's the first part in the page.
And it is... deleting everything after the period on 25-9, and then there's the new language that will be inserted on lines 10 to 12. There's someone in the audience that could speak to this if needed.
Members, have you had an opportunity to read this amendment?
Stays here.
Senator Johnson.
Chair, I have a question of Senator Dahl about the language on line 13, it would seem that maybe that should go through. Maybe I'm not reading it right.
So the proposal members...
Oh, this is inserting.
Yep.
No, delete lines 10 through 12.
So that stays.
Yes. So the bill will read...
Okay.
Shall contract with...
Okay, you're inserting.
Shall contract for career. A series of assessments.
Got
because
it.
We are deleting with nationally recognized vendors. So it will read shall contract for a series of assessments.
Got it.
So that will be the language that is gone. And then on lines 10 and 12, insert the new language.
No, I won't.
That is before us. Members, do you have any questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, regarding striking of the words with a nationally recognized vendor, I'm curious why, I think you said, but I might have just not heard, why are we striking that? I feel some reassurance that the language that you are inserting, it specifically states that it's a nationally recognized assessment. So my question is, why is it that you want to strike nationally recognized vendor when we do want something that's nationally recognized, but...
I think Mr. McHenry is there to answer that question, right? Mr. McHenry,
yeah,
please.
Yes, Madam Chair. Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Just following up on the question from Senator Nelson, and I can expand on this a little bit as well. As this bill moved forward, the question rose is when you're discussing the term nationally recognized vendor, there are different... testing vendors throughout the company or throughout the country that may provide various services for specific grade levels, and they may provide those in certain they may be just from certain areas of the country. I think the idea behind this amendment and the clarification that Senator Dahl is bringing forward is what he's trying to do is ensure that that the terminology to make sure that the exit exam or the final exam in grades 11 and 12 can also be used as a college entrance exam. It's separated from the diagnostic exam in 8th and 10th grade. And there are testing vendors and companies that may not provide the entire entire range of tests. So what this is doing is by separating these two, it's allowing for multiple vendors to go out for this RFP or to apply for this RFP, even if they do not have the complete, even if they don't do third grade through 12th grade testing.
And Mr. McHenry, because it says in here then nationally recognized assessment later on, nationally normed, so that the word nationally continues, but is the, I believe, is the vendor part that mm-hmm. you're trying to clarify, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Members, are you clear on that? Do you have any more questions? If not, Senator Dahl moves the A5 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The A5 is adopted. Thank you, Senator. Okay, we have a technical, so this is the A7. This is a technical amendment that the staff suggested to take a couple of sections that are right now going to state government, correct? Because this particular bill, members, let me just wait until you get a copy of the A7 amendment. Do you have the A7 amendment with you? Mm-hmm. The reason we are deleting these members from the bill right now is that this particular provision needs to go to state government, and it needs to pass state government before we can incorporate it into the final bill. So it's going to be heard tomorrow. Is this a task force or is this a commission? It's a task force, right? It's a task force. It's a task force. So that all, you know, the bills that have a provision for creating task forces need to go to state government. This is still in state government, so it is being taken out so that we don't have the whole bill over there, so we can hear it today and we don't have to meet tomorrow. Do you have any questions on this? If not, Senator Johnson moves the A7 amendment. Any questions? All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Yes, did you say there's a task force tied to this?
Yes.
There is a task force tied.
Right.
Did we just do
we deleted.
We deleted the yeah. task force no, provision from so our on. Omnibus bill today.
Correct. So when it passes over there, it will be sent to finance, and then it will be complete. Next. What do I have next? Okay, members, since these are your amendments, I want you to tell me who wants to go next. Just go ahead and, if you have an amendment, Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, I'll offer the A-15 amendment.
The A-15 amendment. And just be ready to take the next one, members. If you have an amendment, just let me know and we'll take it.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Could we get the page to start delivering the amendments that we know if we...
Yep. So, Senator, if you could let us know where this amendment
yes.
belongs.
Madam Chair, I offered this amendment first for two reasons. One, because you will find it's inserted on page 1, line 7, right at the top of the bill here. But also because I think it goes right to the heart of what... I believe most of us here believe is very essential in regard to education particularly, and that is local control. And this amendment is very simple. It just states that, obviously, in line with all laws, the school board, with the approval of its voters at a referendum, may implement a flexible year-round school calendar. But that is still consistent with the hours of instruction under paragraph A in our bill. And those of us who are involved in education know that we are moving away from seat time requirements, and we are trying to move towards competency. I think that's one of the things that we are, and skills and outcomes. And this simple little amendment tip will allow school boards to determine, does a 45-15 work for them? We've seen 45-15 calendars work well, especially with children at need closing that achievement gap. Some schools may want to start at a different time of the year and end at a different time. Certainly, we will still have the seat time requirements. Make no mistake, all of those things are still in place. But my amendment just allows schools, with the approval of their voters, to implement a flexible year-round school calendar. I can tell you this is the number one issue of superintendents across southeast Minnesota. I assume it's the same throughout the rest of the state as well. But again, it's giving our local elected school boards the authority, with the approval of their voters, to implement a flexible year-round school calendar. I'll call for a roll call.
Thank you, Senator. Senators, I'm going to I know that some of you have gone through this already.
Well, skip the roll call.
So that you have had ample opportunities to look into this. Senator Nelson actually offered this as a bill, and one of the reasons I did not want to entertain it, there are several bills that were introduced that really will bring really those decisions of local governments to us. And I believe that we have a system in place in Minnesota that provides a lot of strength to the local units of government. In our case, our school boards, to make these decisions. We have significant differences in our regions with respect to, you know, what rural Minnesota wants to do in their schools and why they want to do it. Some towns that for whom agriculture, summer breaks are incredibly important. Towns that whose livelihood depends on tourism, quite different from the cities, quite different from suburban. So we have some very differences of opinion as to how this should be handled. And we have multiple people representing these regions here. I represent, you know, Minneapolis, and I voice their urban needs. So I don't think about what happens in the farm when I represent Minneapolis here, or I don't really think about the tourism industry when I think about the school year. That's one issue that has been brought to my attention. The second one is the cost of referendums. So right now, what school districts have to do is just simply go to the department and say, you know, we need to do this because these are the reasons. And they consider that. They look into the region. They say, this is, you know, this is important. People need this. And they consider all of those reasons. And people have those conversations at the local level. This requires, in this bill, senators, when you talk about voters at a referendum, this means campaigning. This means money. So if we approve this bill, what we are telling the districts is that they have to organize a campaign to change their schedules. And I think this is an additional cost. This will go, obviously, into the discussion about the cost of changing schedules. So I just want to give you a couple of technical reasons, whether you agree or disagree. I'm just providing you the background as to why we have this. This decision is typically viewed as an important decision of the school boards based on their ability to really raise the funds to do the campaign and also look into the needs that they have to create a calendar that actually works for the region. So that's the background I have. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. Maybe yes. Senator Nelson, you can help me. I'm supportive of this idea. Would this prevent a district from going to the department and getting an exception if they chose to do it that way? Rather, would it require the referendum?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Thompson, I don't see anything in this legislation that I'm offering today, this amendment, that would preclude that. This language actually just allows the school boards to go to their voters for a flexible learning year. And I will remind members that school boards have referendums for a number of things, whether it be capital projects or override levies or school board elections. So I don't think the referendum would be an objection to this piece of legislation, to this amendment. But this amendment, in fact, you know, the school boards have already, many have gotten together and they call it FLY, Flexible Learning Year. They have been working on this for years. And again, it's not a requirement on any district. It merely gives our local elected officials, with the consent of their constituents, to do what's best for kids. And I know every one of us around here wants to do what's best for students and have the best outcomes. And I will just remind the public that, one of the statistics that we're not very happy about in Minnesota is our large achievement gap, one of the largest in the nation. And the data is clear. A 45-15 calendar certainly helps close that achievement gap. And this amendment would allow a school district, if it wanted to do a 45-15, with the consent of the voters, to do so. It would also allow a school district to determine what that calendar year would look like, as long as it meets all the requirements in law. So it's basically a local control amendment, and I think it's one that's good for students.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Rood.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I think characterizing this as a simple little amendment, seriously, this has a huge economic impact in the state of Minnesota, a huge impact. And I will tell you that, you know, we've been very thoughtful with this bill. We've had a lot of hearings on this overall bill, and now to add an amendment that has this big of an impact on the state of Minnesota as a simple little amendment, I think really is a does a disservice to the bill. And so I will tell you that I think this would send this education bill probably to other committees because of the economic impact and the jobs that it would impact on in this little simple amendment. So I would encourage folks to vote against this, and if Senator Nelson thinks that this is something that should come forward, maybe a bill that can have a thorough vetting and committee would be more appropriate.
Thank you, Senator Root. Senator Clausen and Senator Franz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have several school districts that have implemented four-day school weeks, 45-15, many of these. I know that when they do that, they have lengthy public hearings and make decisions. I'm not aware of any district that's gone through a referendum at this time to make that change. Would you concur, Senator Nelson?
Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair, I am not aware of any requirements for a referendum at this point, although I do know they do need to go through the department. And was there something else?
I was just saying, we appear to have a system that's working well. We've had school districts make the change. We've had public hearings in those communities where the change has been made, and I'm just not sure that it's necessary.
Thank you. Senator Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You have some experiences that are pretty recent.
Sure. So my district, Madam Chair, I represent Edina, who's just looking into starting early before Labor Day, and that was quite the controversial issue in my district. And while I believe in local control completely in regards to schools, districts being able to make those decisions with the right involvement at the local level. There is a cost to referendums, I believe so, and I agree with Senator Rood that this is a farther-reaching, it's not a little amendment, I agree, and I like to be able to talk to the district that I represent because I represent Hopkins as well and others, so I want to make sure that to get their input before I make a decision, an informed decision on such an important piece. But I do believe in local control, and I think your intent of moving this forward is something that we can look at, but I think it merits a longer and more thorough discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. So, members, on the A15 amendment, Senator Nelson,
I just wanted to clarify, I did withdraw my request for a roll call, and also that I don't know that this is related to jobs at all. The amount of time in district in school is still the same, but it does give flexibility to those school boards. So,
thank you. Members, on the A15 amendment, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted.
I love Omnibill amendments.
Thank you.
Who would like to go next?
Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson.
No, I think,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Well,
Senator Nelson, I knew you were doomed when you said it was a simple little amendment.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Peterson. Give us the next simple one.
So I have a simple little amendment. It's the
Senator Peterson, if you could give us the number and then the place where we need to go so people start looking for the...
So, this is the A18 amendment. I'd like to move the A18 amendment. It's on page 33 after line 21, insert, et cetera. And what this amendment is actually a copy of Senate File 789, which was a bill that was going to be heard in this committee today. That really gets at, I think, what is a significant issue for our students in our schools, and there's a lot of research, Madam Chair and members, around the importance of having an effective educator in the classroom. And it's almost, it's become cliche, but they are the highest or the greatest factor in-school factor on positive student achievement, or negative for that matter. And what gets exacerbated even more is when particular students end up being served by teachers consecutively who aren't performing necessarily at the level that we wish they were. And so what this bill does, and Senator Kent's very familiar with it, what this bill does is simply say, in the best interest of students, that teachers at the lowest end of the evaluation scale are not going to serve students in consecutive years. Not keeping in mind, Madam Chair and members, that this is the lowest end. So we're not saying that on a four-tier scale you have to have the best teacher every time around. We're just saying that you shouldn't have teachers consecutively who are on the bottom rung of the effectiveness scale. And I think the bill and the amendment gets to kind of the reason why we enacted the evaluation law in the first place. We enacted that law for the best interests of students in the classroom. And if we're not going to use it as a tool to make sure that kids are being educated effectively, then I'm not sure why we would have the teacher evaluation at all. So I think I'll leave it at that, and I'll take questions or any testimony, Madam Chair.
Members, before I take your opinions and feedback on this, a couple of issues that I need to let you know about this, and one of the reasons for why we've taken time to do this as well. Like Senator Nelson's bill, this is another one that was introduced. I had hesitated until the last minute, hoping that we will get more information. But we had a couple of questions posed on this particular bill. Number one, that we don't have definitions yet about what unsatisfactory actually is. So the department is going to have to define that. And I didn't want to proceed to say that there is a category on for a teacher. I wanted to have it in the bill. I wanted to know what that means. And that was not provided. So I was hoping that it would be provided before today, and Senator Kent knows this. The second one is that there has to be a system in place to inform. So there are two pieces of information that need to be available. One is who these teachers are. We need to let the families know who these teachers are so that they can request a child not to be placed, right? So the second piece is we need to, a parent of a child for whom we make this decision, we need to figure out how that process actually works. So saying my son Tomas is not going to be placed with this teacher that is defined as such requires a process. That means who gets to ask for that? Is the school individually responsible for letting parents know? Will kids actually and parents know that their kid was with an incident? Because there's a label, right? So Tomas is going to class with Teacher Thompson. Teacher Thompson is in this label. So Patricia needs to figure out if Teacher Thompson actually is in this category so that I can make the request. So there are a lot of pieces that we need to have in place in order to make this work. I think the department is here. I will be happy to take your comments and then have the department come and talk about the technical pieces that are necessary in order to put this together. Now, it is possible that we can put this together. I think we can. I don't think that we are ready. And this legislation does, to me, creates a problem for us because it's creating a system right now of determining something that we don't know how it is defined. So we don't know what unsatisfactory actually is. So let me take comments on this. We're going to go to Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair,
Senator
if I could,
Peterson.
You laid out a few things. If I could have an opportunity to respond to those points.
Okay, because Senator Peterson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first point that you made, I think, is a good one. We certainly wouldn't want to have this bill be effective immediately because the infrastructure, the evaluation infrastructure, isn't in place, and you're right about that. If members would look at the bill and the effective dates that are included in the bill, this bill is effective after that has been piloted and the full system has been put into place. So that concern isn't necessarily relevant to this amendment. More than that, we know that there is going to be at least a four-tier evaluation structure for teachers. And so however you want to say what the specifics are of and the mechanics of how that works out, I think we could agree that regardless of the mechanics, the bottom rung is not going to be a place where you want to be on a four-tier system. And I think we would also agree that the expertise provided by the teacher evaluation working group and the department is going to be such that that is going to be a credible measure. And again, getting back to the point then, if that's the case, and we know that's the case, and this isn't effective until after that infrastructure is put into place, then why wouldn't we make a value statement about the importance of education and opportunity for kids to at least have a chance? Because we know that after 3 and 4 years of ineffective teaching, these kids can be 1 and 2 full grade levels behind. So I understand the interest that some people have around making sure that it's right, and I agree with that, which is why we've taken a precautionary measure, and Senate File 789 has as well, in making it effective after the point at which the experts have had time to put together a reliable evaluation structure. Thank you.
Senator Peterson, and I want you to know that I am a strong believer that if we know that a parent has had a child has been with an ineffective teacher for 4 years, we need to fire a teacher. That's where I am. So I feel very strongly that people who are not competent don't need to teach. That's where I am. But I want to ask you this question because I struggle with this. I do not want ineffective teachers in the classroom. Believe me. So my question to you is this, and this is for all of you members. Explain to me, Senator Peterson, how would you envision a system that actually publishes a list that said who is an ineffective teacher, however is it defined, and then let parents know about it, schools make a selection, and then they actually provide a venue so that you can go and say, I don't want my kid with Teacher Wicklund. How do you do that?
Madam Chair, the bill actually doesn't, that's not how the mechanics of the bill work. If you go...
There are no mechanics, member, Senator.
Madam Chair. Refer to members to line 2.32 on the amendment. You can see that it is up to the school administrator to make the determination and make the placement of the child. So there's no, evaluation data is private data under Chapter 13.
That's right.
Which we were very, very intentional about in the crafting of House File 945, which I was a part of, chief author of. So I'm very well familiar with what evaluation data is made public and which ones aren't. This bill doesn't change that. What this says is using the personnel data, much like any other administrative or management decision is made, that administrator will use that in the same fashion they would use it before. There would be not necessarily, parents would not know and should not know the evaluation tiers on which the teacher is. But, and they don't have to. This allows the administrator to use data that they already have access to make a decision that's in the best interest of the students. So I think your question assumes a couple of things that aren't necessarily true about the amendment or current law.
Senator Thompson wanted to, I call your name. I also would like to know if people, you know, some of the people who represent the school administrators in the audience, the department could come to the table so that they can provide some of feedback to this conversation, because it's very much about, it's not the idea that we want, you know, we have very strong feelings about how the idea should come together and why, but it's how do we implement something like that. So Senator Thompson and then Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And frankly, I don't have to say a lot of what I was going to say because Senator Peterson already said it for me. your concern about the evaluation system not being in place is taken care of in the amendment. And I also agree that this would not require parental involvement if the principal of a school is provided with the information to know which of his or her employees in the classroom fall below this level. He then just looks at and says, Thompson's son last year was in a classroom of a teacher who was ineffective, and this year we're going to make sure that doesn't happen, and the parent doesn't have to know, and frankly, I think under law cannot know. So it seems to me this deals with that, and boy, I'll tell you, I can hardly think of a piece of legislation that could go more directly than this to watching out for students. If a student gets the short straw and is put into a classroom with one of the lower performing teachers, let's make sure it doesn't happen again. Wow, to me that's about as much of a protection for students as I can think of.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with what Senator Peterson and Senator Thompson have said in terms of data privacy would be a huge part of this, and I think we could continue to strengthen that as necessary because I think it's crucial. What I envision as a result of the teacher evaluation process that is currently evolving, and I know many are in agreement with some of the basic principles of that, where we can envision a young teacher still learning his or her craft, does not get a great evaluation one year, and then the next year is in line for all sorts of support and professional development and mentorship, and that is great, and that is the training that teacher is going to need to become the great teacher that they can become. But during that unsatisfactory year, or whatever the definition will be under the evaluation system that will be established by the school districts or the state, whichever the district opts to go with, students were in that classroom, and that affected their learning. And so the next year, they should not be put in the similar situation. Nobody's a bad teacher. People are learning and improving their craft. And this just envisions making sure that much the way administrators right now balance classrooms in terms of gender or gifted and talented or special needs, behavioral issues, this is one more factor that would be considered by administrators when they are balancing classrooms to make sure that students are given a great chance at great teachers and a great education. Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know where to start on this particular bill. I see all kinds of troubles with this, including the fact that, as mentioned, we don't know what the actual teacher evaluation will look like. I taught in a rural school district for 9 years in Sabika, Minnesota. I was the only social studies teacher for all of 11th grade. I was the only social studies teacher for all of 12th grade. Some of these small schools have one Spanish teacher, one music teacher, one art teacher, and then the scheduling nightmare. Some of the kids are in my room because Spanish only meets this time, science only meets this time, AP classes only meet this time. And so the scheduling nightmare, not the fact that the rural districts would be hamstrung because they only have one teacher in very few disciplines. And I also believe that 2016-17 is still too soon. We have put the performance piece in place, but we still do we know from the data if it's really working yet. So this is I'm sorry, Senator Peterson, this is a terrible amendment, and I'm going to be voting no.
Senator Clausen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments, and some of this will be repeated, I think. We're working under the assumption that the teacher evaluation process is a good one. I'm not convinced of that. First of all, it's grossly underfunded. Secondly, the people that are identified as needing assistance, they're going to be identified. They're going to be known. They're going to be going through workshops. They are going to be known by their peers. They're going to be known by other people. So data privacy is a real concern. I'm also concerned about we have the very best teachers in the classroom. There's no question about that, and we always need to keep improving on our teaching force in Minnesota. So that's extremely important. I'm also have concerns about the 35% rule for teacher evaluation student assessment. I think that's problematic in many ways because assessments were never designed to evaluate teachers. It was a process where we can evaluate student growth and work on that. So I do have some concerns. I have concerns about having the very best teachers in our classrooms, no question about that, but I do have concerns about this proposal. Thank you.
And members, I just really want you to listen to that, and I do want to call the department, and I do want to call some of the people who will be responsible for implementing this. So I don't want us to really talk about the value. Of course we want the best teachers teaching our most vulnerable children. I hope that that is a given. Of course we do. So the issue is, how do we go about actually doing that and doing it well? Not just these, you know, okay, we have an idea. No, that's not a good idea. This extreme others, delete it. That's not a good thing. What is a good plan? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the thoughtful nature of this amendment, and I also appreciate Senator Claussen, Senator Dahl's comments about the difficulty, particularly in the secondary setting where we have different classes, different teachers every hour. And so with that, I would like to offer an oral amendment, which is, and I'll have staff tell me the best way to word that, but the idea would be for students in grade kindergarten through grade 4. So I do want to acknowledge Senator Dahl's concern in the secondary schools about how difficult that would be for scheduling. But in grades K through 4, and I'll let you ponder how the best way to do that is, Ms. Butler, and just speak to the importance of this amendment to Senator Peterson's amendment, which I hope he'll accept as a friendly amendment. We know in this committee the importance of literacy by the age of grade 3, being on grade level in reading. We also spent a lot of time in this committee making sure that our policies are intended to help students with outcomes. So at the end of the day, we have students who are ready for college and career, and we know it all goes back to those early years and being literate. And we focused a lot of policy and money and incentives on early literacy. And those of you who were in the committee last year, I hope you can recall the data and the graphs that showed the achievement was of a student who had been placed 2 years in a row with an ineffective teacher. It was nearly impossible to overcome that. And I wish I could get that data right up here for you today to pass it out. But many of you were on that committee. You can check the data, especially in those early grades. Having a student in a classroom 2 years in a row with an ineffective teacher is saddling that child with basically the inability to become a proficient learner. And I think it's immoral. I believe that we should make sure that every student, particularly in those early grades, has the opportunity to get the instruction that they need, particularly in literacy. If they're not reading on grade level by the end of grade 3, there are problems the rest of the way. And so I want to take into account Senator Dahl's comments about the scheduling issues. And that's why my amendment is limiting it to those early grades where it is so essential. And if you're queasy about this, look at it as a pilot. We're doing it on a limited basis. And I do appreciate, Madam Chair, your comments, making sure that the process is in place. And certainly, if you look at the effective date on this amendment, the process will be in place. And I also want to address, I think it was Senator Dahl who mentioned, rightfully so, that, well, we don't know what it looks like yet. And so we don't know what that what the parameters are going to be for that effective teacher yet. And I'll say, yes, that's true. We do not. But we know those parameters will be there before this amendment takes effect. And I also find it very curious that that line of logic did not stop us from adopting an exchange, a health insurance exchange, when not only have the feds not told us what those qualified plans are going to look like, neither has the Minnesota market rules been written. Those rules haven't even been written yet.
Senator, let's don't talk about the exchange because we're done with that conversation.
Inconsistency.
So Senator Nelson has an amendment that will actually change to grades K to 4. On that, on that question, we will go back to the conversation on the entire amendment, but on that one,
is it a friendly amendment?
Any
Madam
questions?
Chair, could Senator we ask Johnson? Council to advise us whether this affects the whole nature of the bill? How do teachers who are in 5th through 12th grade get, how do you deal with the teachers in 5th through 12th grade with this section being specifically for K through 4?
Madam Chair, members, my understanding of the amendment is that it would only affect teachers that are teach grade K through 4, so this standard would not apply as far as placement for the grade 5 through 12 teachers.
Mm-hmm. So, and Madam Senator Chair, is that what you are intending to do?
Senator Nelson.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, it is. And basically, it would mean we're making sure that at least for half of those early years that are so critical, a child would not be placed in the classroom of an ineffective teacher.
Senator Carlson.
That's exactly what it is.
Even on the elementary school teachers, Madam Chair, there are ELL, there are reading teachers, there are others that are specialty teachers that there probably are only one in the building. So we're not really changing anything by going to the elementary and expecting this to be workable.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I'll try to address that. By the way, I support Senator Nelson's amendment to the amendment. Unless the author of the amendment can convince me I'm wrong, which is possible. It happens to me frequently. What I would suggest then is maybe Ms. Butler could help us just add some language to the effect of if another teacher is available. Obviously, if there is only one teacher in a real small school or whatever, that's fair. I mean, we can't, you know, not send the kid to class. So, Ms. Butler, if you could help with that. And if Senator Nelson would accept that as
yes.
friendly to include in her amendment to the amendment, then she can just move them both.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to incorporate that language.
Thank you, Senator
Madam
Nelson.
Chair.
So let's, Senator Johnson, I just want to make sure, Senator Johnson, before you move, so that we are, doing an oral amendment to change to K to 4, and then availability of teachers. So we're trying to mix that. If you could work on that, Ms. Butler, on those issues that are before us. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nelson, I appreciate the constructive attempt there. And I would prefer a wider scope, but in the interest of working together here and trying to find a workable solution, I think that makes sense with the incorporated language that Senator Thompson has pointed out. I do want to mention, though, to the members here, we've used the term teacher, and this will affect teachers. And this is nothing punitive for teachers. This does not doesn't take away any element of due process, nor does it eliminate a teacher's ability to stay in the classroom. It doesn't change the tenure law or the continuing contract law. This is nothing punitive for teachers. It is a safeguard for kids. So if we could focus on that, that this is really about making sure that kids have an effective teacher in the classroom for their benefit, not for anybody else's benefit. Madam Chair, I would support
the
Nelson
amendment.
Incorporated amendment.
And the staff will read it in a minute so that it will read exactly the way members want. Senator Johnson and Senator Franz.
Madam Chair, mine is not about the amendment.
Okay, so let's wait on that. So we will go back to the actual amendment. We're now on the amendment to the amendment. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my comments are not only on the amendment, but on the oral amendment or the amendment to the amendment, but just the whole notion of having this discussion about this bill, and because this was a standalone bill. And I was looking forward to the hearing because I do support the spirit of it. I just don't think we're at a point where we can make an informed decision without having the appropriate stakeholders and vet the issue, because this is not a bad idea. It could be shaped many different ways. So having it now as an amendment to our omnibus bill, I just don't feel like it's premature, because as stated before, we are not going to know the details of the teacher evaluation and the standards of that and what's going to be an ineffective teacher. And I'm a lawyer, so I like definitions before I just jump into, passing a law that doesn't have a definition. And I don't like to work in a vacuum. and health insurance and insurance exchanges is a whole different story. We can't control that. That's the federal government. Here we do. We can control it because we're going to be already tasked in state law to make those decisions. So while I am supportive of the spirit of this amendment, I don't think I can support it today because I don't feel like I have the information I need, again, to make an informed decision. So that's why I will not support it.
Mr. McHenry, I would like you to come to the table, please. I know that the department is trying to be very careful about this.
In the meantime, Madam Chair, I'd like to request
Ms.
a roll
Salzman,
call.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Peterson, we will do a roll call. And Ms. Salzman, believe me, it's not that I am ignoring you, but I just don't want to get to the spirit of this because I know where people are at with respect to these issues. I know how deeply we care about achievement gap and children of color. I don't know why we haven't made progress in 20 years, but we do care very deeply about the achievement gap. And I know why we want to do what we want to do, but I want to hear the mechanics of it. So I want to make clear to the members that what I'm trying to get at here is how do we actually do this? Spirit is not enough. We need to actually get it done. So Senator Johnson, and then
I'm pleased that you recognize me because I want to bring up an issue that I'd like the people who are commenting to comment about. I believe that if we move with this piece of legislation the way it's written, or pretty much the way it's written, and have an unsatisfactory slot, I would say that there will be no teachers in that slot. Because if I were a principal, I would not want to have someone know and find out that their child had been in or an ineffective teacher. Those are such negative words. Now, a teacher that needs some extra training, a teacher that needs some other support, that's different. But I would bet that there will be no one in that unsatisfactory slot. Because, and then the second part is, what if all of your teachers are really good? But they're very effective teachers, but, you know, there's maybe a slight difference between one or the other because of their tenure, maybe, number of years they've taught, or whatever. It begs for a lawsuit from anybody, any parent who's not happy, in my estimation. And I'd like comments from the people that are professionals.
Okay, we have the department. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. You know, we appreciate the discussion you're all having. We share with you the idea. We want to make sure we ensure we have the best teachers in our classrooms. What I did bring was our Assistant Commissioner Rose Hermanson, who actually has overseen our teacher evaluation work group, and I think she could provide some great information and some details on that. So I'm going to turn it over to her.
Ms. Hermanson, could you please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. My life for the past year and a half has been pretty much dominated by principal and teacher evaluation and that process. And I think our working group is doing an excellent job of moving forward. We are scheduled to start piloting the teacher evaluation system starting next year. We have found that there are some things that we want to find out through the piloting process how it's going to work, and we may have some other changes that we will bring back to you after we find how this piloting, what it shows us. Some of the detail you've already talked about, there are many issues you've mentioned. It's the different types of arrangements of instructional delivery that create some of those. Do we have teachers that are team teaching? Do we have teachers that teach across grade levels? And many other types of situations that we need to address as we move forward with that pilot. The law does not require four tiers. That's what we are doing in our model, and I'm not sure because school districts do allow, the school districts may develop their own. We don't know yet how many are going to have fewer than four tiers, and I just wanted to clarify that for the record. Specifically as it relates to the amendment, and quite frankly, Madam Chair and members, we would be very happy later in the session when you have not deadlines to have a more thorough discussion about where we are with the teacher evaluation model. And I think it would be well worth a full committee hearing to learn the details of where we are. On this amendment specifically, as it relates to that classification. I think we've discussed that already. What's that going to mean? What's that going to look like? We are viewing this model as a way for development of teachers, the identification of certain skills and necessities that a teacher may have. The evaluation is based on three different components. One is teacher practice, one is student engagement, and one includes the value added or the assessment data. I think we need to flesh that out before we can clearly identify who may be unsatisfactory, and I think there's a lot of detail in that still needs to be vetted. As the amendment points out, this data goes to the commissioner to assure that it's in place. I think there are some logistic problems with this amendment. Are we to request that? At what point? Who would know whether we should be getting that data? And how we would make that determination? I would not feel comfortable going forward on this amendment without having it reviewed by the folks that look at data privacy issues. It's different when a school district has personnel data and they are the employer. And they are in the district. I'm not sure. The department, we frequently get data requests. And what are our obligations to release that data publicly? If we're asking for this data, what are our requirements? I would be very uncomfortable without knowing what those requirements would be without having vetted through the committee that deals with that. We also have a concern that this is basically an employment issue. How do districts staff their schools? And what kind of arrangements they have, and I think Senator Dahl mentioned some of that. Again, what is our purview over that? I don't think the department should have that type of purview. And I don't know how the administrative groups would feel about this, but I don't know how this would work concerning the fact that they would appeal to us and we wouldn't know who would make that appeal or under what circumstances and what it's based on without having to go out and seek that kind of information. So I think logistically there are some problems with making this work. But I've spent my last year and a half working on making sure we have a very effective and supportive evaluation system for teachers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hermanson. And I hope that you very much help us figure out how do we deal, you know, with the issue that we have some very many vulnerable children who don't have access to teachers that can help them. And so how do we go about that? I know you're working
hard on
that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think our working group committee would feel that you have 1 year to improve and then they shouldn't be in the classroom. And that's kind of fundamentally how they view it. And so I'm not sure what's behind the whole impetus behind this, but the way they've got the current model from the state written up is we identify weaknesses, we help you and support you with those weaknesses, and then the process that's laid out in a continuing contract or tenure law should be utilized to assure that that teacher is not in the classroom anymore.
Yes.
Thank you. Members, in view of time, you know, I'm going to just hear very briefly. I know Ms. Saltzman has been patiently sitting there. I want you to give your brief comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate that. And I appreciate the discussion, and I have great respect for Senator Kent and her courage in carrying this bill. There was an author's amendment that would have been presented today that would address the issues because this is about the technical piece. And that amendment said, because we understand that every school district may have a different evaluation system, there will be the default method of the state, but the way the amendment was written was that to delete an unsatisfactory, because that is the word that is in the pilot, but it's not going to be used in every school district will refer to it differently. So it would say the teacher who received the lowest evaluation rating consistent with this subdivision. So it wasn't a label. It wasn't ineffective. It wasn't unsatisfactory. It was the lowest rating. So that was in response to things. The other thing is about data privacy. We have absolute respect in terms of Minnesota's law regarding data privacy. And so, again, the author's amendment would have said to delete the piece about the commissioner, that by October 1st, each school principal or other person having administrative control must submit to the district superintendent in the form and manner determined by the superintendent information demonstrating compliance with this paragraph. So it would be contained within the school district. We do not support at this point releasing this data to parents. We respect the Minnesota data privacy laws. And so this would be a way for parents to know. And I think that the discussion about we have to do this before we could have this law, I would suggest to this committee that this will help drive those decisions. I know that in the laws passed about the teacher licensure on reading, and that we looked at how do we improve literacy instruction, was that we passed the law in 2009 with the idea it would go into effect in 2012, and that helped drive the system. And so if there are issues by how would a district implement this, if you have the policy, it will help them look at that. And we certainly have looked at other states. So
Thank you, Ms. Solomon-Salzman. I really appreciate it. So as you can tell, members, this is one of the things that we have to do. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have a lot of time to listen, to hear perspectives, to figure out how it's going to work, to have the school administrators come and tell me how it's going to work, to have the department tell me how it's going to work. And we're not ready for that. That's how I feel about this. So closing comments, Senator Peterson, we're going to take action on the amendment for the last portion of it from the K to 4. If you could read that language, Ms. Butler, and then we will go into the amendment. So first, this is an amendment to the amendment to the amendment. So on this one.
Madam Chair, members, page 2. Line 33, after the second A, insert kindergarten through grade 4. Then on 2.34, after the word teacher, insert comma, if another satisfactory teacher is available. In addition, members, on page 4, line 35, after the second letter A, insert the same for the regarding the kindergarten through grade 4. As well as on 4.36, after the word teacher, insert comma if another satisfactory teacher is available.
Okay, are you clear? We're going to vote on that. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. I'm in doubt. Those in favor of that motion, raise your hands. Those opposed, say no. Raise your hands. Those opposed, raise your hands. The motion is not adopted. Now, on the motion, Senator Peterson, this is the final motion that you presented as is, as the language that we just amended. This is the final motion. Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, and just briefly on the action that was just taken by the committee, what the committee just voted down was a limitation in scope on the amendment. We just voted down changing it to K through 4 and an alternate education. I don't even know why you would, even if you oppose the amendment, why you would oppose the amendment to the amendment. I'd like to move to reconsider the amendment just to make sure that everybody got that right the first time.
Senator, I think there were enough votes. So I would like to move into the amendment. If you reconsider this and it goes in, we have to vote on the final amendment. So I would like to move on into the final amendment. Senator Weakland.
Yes, Madam Chair.
On the final amendment, Senator.
Yes, correct. Yes, that's what I wanted to address. At first, when this was brought up, my initial reaction was that we haven't finished implementing the teacher evaluation system yet. I have concerns about, adding a different policy to sort of in parallel to that. However, as I've heard the discussion and I've heard the department speak and Ms. Salzman and others around the table just talk about why we would want to do this, I think that implementing this kind of a policy decision before, I think it would make sense. I think that having this concept that we want an opportunity to have the district look at placing children with this concept that they shouldn't be 2 years in a row with an ineffective teacher. I think that concept is a good one. And I think if we had that policy in place now, I think districts would have to consider that, and teachers, and everybody would have to consider it as they are formulating the final policy. So that's why I would support considering that today.
Senator Clausen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I go back to the issue that we're assuming we have a good teacher evaluation process and policy in the state. And again, I'm not convinced of that. I go back to the fact that it is not financially supported to the extent that it should be based upon the components of the program. And that's a major issue. I think there are other pieces. And after listening to the testimony by the Department of Education, all I heard was kind of questions about how it's going to work, questions about the effects. And because of that, I support the idea of, again, the best teachers in the classroom. We want to have the very best there, but I think this would be something to be reviewed following the pilot, and we have more information on how that teacher evaluation program is working in the state.
Thank you, Senator Clausen, and I hope people understand that that's what we're trying to do. So we agree with the concept of placing kids with the best teachers. I think what the department is telling us is that they need to let us know how that definition is going to work before we put this in place. Senator Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can see it from both angles, and I appreciate everybody's comments. I think this is kind of a gotcha amendment because I've been working with Senator Kent. We've been working on this issue. We didn't get a hearing. This should be a standalone bill, and I would be supportive with the right information in front of me. I just don't think this is the right process right now as an amendment to make this important decision when we have so many questions. So if this is a gotcha amendment, you got me because I'm going to vote against it because it deserves due process. It deserves a hearing so we hear all about these issues. Otherwise, we're going to come back and fix this bill, fix this amendment, because I have concerns that we're going to have to do that if we pass it today. So that's, again, you got me.
Okay. We're going to vote on these members. I think we know.
Wait a minute. I'm ready to speak to my amendment.
Senator Peterson, briefly, and we're going to vote. Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, and I will decide not to motion to reconsider the previous amendment as well, just for the record. This is my first opportunity to speak to it in, as the amendment itself. As far as the gotcha amendment, Senator Franson, I won't take offense to that. This bill was on the calendar to be heard in this committee. We all prepared. As minority members, we don't know which bills are coming until you guys tell us what is coming. So we prepared to debate an issue. We come to committee to prepare it, and at the last minute, it's pulled off the calendar. Now, I won't get into what I believe to be the motivations behind that, because I think that would be inappropriate. But I can tell you that in my 3 years in the legislature, I wasn't surprised to come to committee and see that that bill was pulled. And I think everybody in the room knows what I'm talking about. As far as the process goes, this is the process. This is the base level policy committee. And there are a number of other stops for this bill. As I understand it, it's being rolled into the education finance bill. Countless state policies are adopted in manners just like this. As far as not understanding what is in the teacher evaluation law, in fact, that's just not true. There is a framework that is in statute right now. You even heard Assistant Commissioner Hermanson speak to three of the components. Administered by education professionals who have spent their life doing these things, I would imagine that these things would work out fairly well. They are student engagement, teacher practice, and a 35% attachment to student achievement. Now, if you think that the administration of those three things is going to be flawed as administered by education professionals and that we can't rely on them, then I think we've got bigger problems than this amendment or this issue in and of itself. As it goes to the data piece, and Madam Chair, I'm taking bullet points here as I'm listening to the testimony, it is simply not true, and I'm surprised, quite frankly, that Assistant Commissioner Hermanson would leave some ambiguity as it relates to what is public and what isn't. It is in the law. It is not public data. It is explicitly not public data. So that is not a legitimate question. And as far as whether the teacher evaluation law is or isn't going to be an effective measure, like I stated, we already know what the framework is, and we don't have to guess at that. So, members, I've been here, granted, for just 3 years, but I can tell you that the excuses for not acting on education reform policies knows no bounds. And there is, in every committee, I could have told you, members, quite frankly, what the opposition arguments were to this amendment before I walked into the committee door. And I think many of you know that as well. So I think it's unfortunate. This is a bipartisan approach. And for some reason, at the 11th hour, it was struck from the
Senator,
from the calendar.
I am going to speak to that since you have said it twice, and I'm going to say it twice again. There are questions about the implementation of this piece of policy that require time. And as the chair, I want to give you the time. I want to give you the time. I have to hear this bill today, and then I had two items in the agenda. So I thought, do I do this? Do I do that one? Do I do Senator Bonos? Which ones can I do today? I need to do this bill. This is our omnibus policy bill. I want to give Senator Kent all the time to have this conversation. I want to do this right because I believe in what she's trying to do. Absolutely, I do. I was not going to be able to give her the time at midnight today. I think that's unfair. It's unprofessional to bring at the last minute a bill that is so important. That's what's going to happen because at 3 I have to go to higher ed, and she does too. She is in higher ed with me. So I knew that she had to leave. She has to come back and have this same conversation at midnight. So this is a got you amendment because we're having a discussion about a very important issue, and we're not going through 13 amendments that you guys have on an issue that is incredibly important to all of us. This is a bipartisan issue. You're absolutely right, Senator Peterson. I want to talk about this. I do want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it through an amendment. I do not believe that that is fair to our children. It is not.
Madam Chair,
Senator Carlson and Senator Wigger,
I
would like to end this conversation because we need to vote.
We know what is behind this. Of a gotcha amendment. I've moved two policy bills through the legislature, and both of which I spent over 10 hours in the committee process.
We could, and we will, Senator.
Each, Madam Chair. So I'm very familiar with what is customary and what it takes to move critical policy through this body. Yep. But to describe a DFL bill being offered as an amendment, as a gotcha amendment, I think is disrespectful.
Senator, we will have a conversation on this issue. I promise you, because it's very important to all of us. We will. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would use a little bit different terminology than gotcha. I would say it's a feel-good amendment. And it's a feel-good amendment because it comes from a group who has it on their website. This is the same group that rated Minnesota schools D, and Louisiana is rated B. Louisiana is rated the highest in the nation. And one of the reasons why is that they're putting this kind of amendment or this kind of law into place in Louisiana. And that makes them rate so much better than us. They're the ones that want to have mayors take over schools. They're anti-teacher from the beginning. Now, one of the things that you need to know here is that we're talking about teachers who have been teaching for 4 years before this happens to them, or before this happens to the students that are in their classes. The first year they teach, their contract automatically is not renewed. If they're rated low, they're gone. The second year when they teach, if they're low, they're automatically gone. The third year, they're automatically gone. So if they have passed 3 years and now in the fourth year they get rated low, that's the first time that this could be applied to them. And then, you know, Senator Kent mentions that, you know, one, there might be a blip. And let's say they did have 3 good years and then 1 bad one. And now we're gonna try to repair that teacher, which I think is a good idea. I would say it's fine with me if they try to terminate that teacher because we want good teachers. There's no two ways about it. We want good teachers. But the fact of the matter is that, and I've been doing performance appraisals for all of my professional life, and there is no performance appraisal that looks forward. They always look backward. And what you're trying to do is improve the performance. And Senator Kent did mention that this teacher is going to get extra help the year after they were rated low. And that means the new teacher that the student that is under the umbrella here of not getting into two successive bad teachers, they're going to get into a classroom that is getting that extra help. Because that performance appraisal is looking backward and you're trying to fix that in the year that the that the person is now involved in. So that student will get into a classroom where that teacher is supposed to be getting extra help to an industry you generally call that performance review or some other method of changing the performance. But I'm also concerned about just the nature of putting this into law. Now, we talk about it being confidential, but this is going into law. So the parent is going to be involved. The parent is going to want to say, I don't want that teacher. I don't like that teacher. I've heard that teacher is bad. You're putting my son into that class, and I want to know if that teacher is rated low. Or the other way. Why can't my son have Mr. Clausen as their teacher? And the principal now has to justify why they can't put their son into a classroom after having Carlson for this year, and then they're going to go into Clausen. This makes it a public issue, and it won't take 30 seconds, and somebody's going to file a lawsuit. And then we'll have a conflict here, because in law, the principal will not be able to put that student into two successive bad, so-called bad teachers, and they will have to justify it. Other thing is that how will that principal tell that family? Will that principal say,
Madam Chair, sorry? That's simply not in the bill. I mean, I'm not going to.
No, we're talking about
sit
how
here and
Senator
listen
Carlson,
to that.
Senator Peterson.
To that point, I mean, just the more times you say it doesn't make it any more true. It's not in law. And it's not in the bill. I don't mind having a debate about an issue, but let's debate the subject matter.
Madam Chair,
that's
I think I have
us.
The floor, don't I? Madam Chair, do
I'm
I have?
Sorry, Senator, but I've been asked a question. Could you please repeat that?
Do I have the floor?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Thank you.
Briefly, Senator.
And again, this ineffective teacher study, which I have heard, and people have said that they're going to get it to me, and they never have. And they've talked about an ineffective teacher for 2 years in a row. When was that teacher branded as ineffective? Was it after you found out that the child had already been in the next class and was found to be deficient? Is that when you branded that teacher ineffective? Or do we have somewhere in the nation where this program is already in place and they already did a study on it? I have not seen anything like that. I've seen it referred to many times, but it's never been put out in front of me and never referred by study name. I think this is radically premature. I like the idea of making sure that our teachers are the best they can be, but this is not the way to do it. This is going to be a big fight in schools. It's going to be it's lawsuits waiting to
Senator
happen.
Senator Carlson. Let's move on.
Okay. I'd like to request a roll call.
And I guess we can cover the rest of it later.
There's more?
Sure.
Okay, Senator.
Big deal.
Let's just, I think we have, clearly, we have some strong views about, how we want to proceed. We understand. I ask Senator Kent multiple times if we could have a hearing on it that would give us time to work on this, because I knew that we needed time, and I knew that this conversation was going to stop the conversation about the omnibus bill. That's why I didn't want to bring it today, Senator. So it is very unfortunate that we are bringing this through an amendment. I believe that there are a couple of people in the audience who are asking to please give them a time to talk, and I think this is exactly what we needed to do, so we're going to do it. If there are people in the audience who wish to speak about this issue, please come forward. Ms. Alsager, could you please identify yourself and proceed with your thoughts?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsager, Education Minnesota. I think that this is a very healthy debate. First of all, I want to make it very clear that Education Minnesota is supporting the teacher evaluation law because we want great teachers in every classroom.
Yes.
Which is why in the teacher evaluation law, it says that if a teacher cannot meet Excuse me, let me go back a little bit. There are certain requirements that in the standards of effective practice that a teacher must meet. If the evaluator does not feel that the teacher met those, the administrator puts that teacher in a teacher improvement process with established goals and set timelines. If a teacher cannot meet that, then the administrator may do what they deem appropriate. And I hope everybody's listening very carefully to this, because they may terminate a teacher. And if they're not doing a good job, they should be terminated. The evaluation program is not fully implemented. We don't know exactly how it's going to work. And I must say, too, that it's not funded yet. There is no funding for this teacher evaluation program to work. So we're asking administrators who have not been trained yet to implement an evaluation law. And the staff development funds are not going to required to go to the site anymore, so there's no money for the teacher improvement process. Someone made the point about what is unsatisfactory, and I appreciate, Senator Kent, you talking about that issue. But what could it be? As an administrator, if I am a teacher, and I am not a very prompt person, and I show up late too many times, I could be defined as unsatisfactory. My performance is unsatisfactory. Does that mean I'm not a good teacher? You might have someone who has trouble with record keeping and paperwork. Does that mean that you're not a good teacher and that you should not be with, kids should not be with an unsatisfactory teacher because they're bad at their paperwork? Could it be because an administrator, frankly, has a problem with this teacher because this teacher is very assertive? And, you know, I have known to be assertive at times, and I told my administrator what I thought a special ed student should have. And I was a strong advocate for my special ed kids and any kid in my class. Did I ruffle my administrator's feathers once in a while? Yes, I did. And is it possible that an administrator might say, you know, subjectively that Ms. Allswager is unsatisfactory because maybe I'm not as cooperative as I should be? Think about the evaluation system. 35% is based on test results. The remaining amount in student engagement and teacher practice is basically subjective. So I think that there are a lot of ways that a teacher could be seen as unsatisfactory. If you think about some of your favorite teachers or your kids' favorite teachers, they are probably different than your neighbor's favorite teachers or their children's favorite teachers. We have a difference in personality and a difference in a way to connect. Frankly, administrators have differences in how they evaluate people. To say that one administrator can make a decision that would affect the placement of kids doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, really, this is saying that do we really trust our administrators? Are they making a good decision? We believe that they can make good decisions. We are very concerned about the data pieces. We do believe that there will be more litigation, because once you have that stamp of unsatisfactory, there are consequences. And if you notice, the previous testifier said that we would not support that data being public at this point. And that's a concern to us. We want to have very, very good teachers in our classroom.
Thank you.
So we would recommend that this be looked at a later date after we have the teacher evaluation system in place.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. We appreciate it. Please.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Ernst, and I represent the two school principals' associations. I can't really add much to this debate, but I don't want to sit in my chair and let you assume that we don't have a very strong feeling about this as the discussion goes. I might say, Madam Chair, one of the problematic pieces today is that we have hardly any copies of the amendment, so a lot of us are just trying to take this down as you say it. We don't actually have them to read them in front of us. I think what you're struggling with here is that you would like to address ineffective teaching. You put into play a significant process with teacher and principal evaluation that's going to be implemented over multiple years, as Rose Hermanson talked about. And we need to give that some time to work. We would say, and Senator Dahl started to hit on these, Senator Klassen started to hit on these, there are multiple problems if you want to try to address ineffective teaching with something as simple as class assignment. And assignment, as Senator Johnson pointed out, is a very complex, important process. And the merging of these two would be very problematic for Minnesota school principals. Everyone agrees we should address effective teaching and reward and encourage and develop effective teaching. And for people that shouldn't be in the profession, we should do something else. But this particular model would be fraught with problems for us if you adopted it. And we'd urge you to keep talking about all of these issues but not adopt this model. Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm sorry to
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. We really appreciate your testimony because I think that's the motivation behind, you know, just trying to really have a conversation that is more meaningful is what I wanted to have. So, members, I believe that I really want to vote. I think we have heard enough. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't believe I've commented yet, and I will be brief. I think if you go out to the state fair here in about 5 months and you said to parents walking the fairgrounds, you know, we tried to implement a system whereby the state of Minnesota had 3.5 years to fulfill their mission to determine a set of criteria to evaluate teachers. And we then wanted to put a situation or put a circumstance in place where, you know, your child won't be subjected to an ineffective teacher 2 years in a row. What do you think about that?
Thank you,
Senator. I'll let you decide what percentage you think would say yes. But you see, it's all so complicated when we get here, which is exactly why I'm reminded of the William F. Buckley Jr. quote. I'd rather entrust the government of the United States to the first 400 people listed in the Boston Telephone Directory than to the faculty of Harvard University. At some point, if we believe in teacher accountability and we believe in all these things we say we agree in, we have to pass legislation accordingly.
Thank you, Senator. Senators, I think we are ready to vote on the, excuse me, but I think it's the 18 amendment. Now I lost track.
Madam Chair?
On the 18 amendment, A18 amendment. Senator Wigger, could you be brief, please?
I'll try. I don't want ineffective teachers that have been deemed ineffective or, you know, multiple times to be in a situation that it's going to harm students. And I believe Ed Minnesota, you know, has indicated that as well, and you know, we're in agreement. We've also have put in place a process, an evaluation process, that with the department has a number of stakeholders in place, including the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Partnership, and others, and you've seen them. I would like for us to entertain either it may be an amendment to substitute, but I'm going to ask counsel to see if she can reflect on something that would accomplish this. It would have the Department of Education, in cooperation with the stakeholders that are listed, develop recommendations on the subject that is here. And then with the date that would be consistent with what has been put in place so that the concerns addressed by the representatives of the principals who are the primary evaluators for those teachers and other stakeholders that are involved so that we can give it the type of review that I think is necessary. So that would be my intent, and I would ask Ms. Butler if she has comments on what an appropriate amendment might be to accomplish that.
Can you do magic?
Not that good.
Well, Senator, my sense is that this needs time, right? It goes back to the same thing that I have been asking. This requires time, and I want to keep the integrity of this process. Senator, that's what I intended to do. I couldn't do it by today. Okay, so I want people to understand that is what I was confronted with. Do we have this conversation and give the time that it deserves, or do we engage in this? All of the administrators, the people who will be responsible for implementing your ideas, just say, you know, I don't know how are we going to do this. The school administrators, the teachers, the department say, we don't know how are we going to do this. Some of us, some people are saying, well, you know, you should, but they don't. So let's vote on this. All of those in favor of this motion signify.
Roll call. Madam Chair, I requested a roll call earlier.
The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Torres-Ray.
No.
Senator Dahl.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Clausen.
No.
Senator Franzen.
No.
Senator Johnson.
No.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Nenow.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Rood.
No.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
No.
Senator Wicklund.
Yes.
On a 7-8 vote, the amendment is not adopted. Now we need to move into the next amendment. Who has it? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been moving papers around. I got it located, so I can tell you the number of it. I apologize. It is the A8. And briefly for members, as they're getting a look at it, the effect of this one is to remove...
Senator, would you be so kind and point us to the language in the bill so that we can locate
Yes,
your
I can.
Change.
I can try to do that, although it's referenced in a number of places. So first I'll just describe the concept. What this would do is remove from the bill Senator Wieger's provisions for compulsory education attendance at school through the age of 18. And I'd be happy to go through the lines it affects. Line or page 10, delete section 1.
Put your second, Senator. Just be slow on that one.
All right.
10. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 10, delete section 1. Page 11. Delete sections 2 and 3. Then flip over to page 33, please. Delete section 18. Then over to page 57. Delete section 24. And then the last one, Madam Chair, is on page 59. Delete lines 19 and 20, and then renumber the sections in sequence and correct internal references and amend title accordingly. But as I explained, Madam Chair, the effect of this is very simple. It simply is removing all the references to the compulsory attendance of school through age 18, and I would point out for the committee that this obviously was debated, and we had a full hearing on it and voted on it. I believe it didn't be laid over. Maybe, one of the two. Anyway.
No, it was included.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why it's here.
And you know, certainly Senator Wieger's intent, I understand. In an ideal world, we all children would complete high school and get their diploma, and off we'd go. But I just think if you have a situation where a child of, you know, 17 or 18 years of age simply does not want to be there, it's really difficult to force that child. I think that this would be placing a burden upon districts that would be very, very difficult to meet. And so I respectfully request that the members vote yes on this amendment.
Thank you. Senator Wieger.
I oppose.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
Madam Chair,
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Thank you for elaborating. We would appreciate that.
And actually,
for the record, we're on the A8 amendment. I didn't say that.
And I will request a roll call, please.
And Madam Chair, I will have an amendment actually addressing compulsory ed that was suggested by representatives of the School Boards Association and from representative of the principals, talking about some flexibility. It would still have the compulsory attendance increase to 18 so that we could be in step with other states, the majority of states, but it would have language addressing the alternative learning centers and have that as a direct option for referral. So,
Senator, if I may ask, this is the policy committee. Where is that language going to go?
Madam Chair, it will go in this bill. It was just drafted this morning. So,
We have it here. Here to be offered. Okay, Sorry. Yes, Senator Thompson.
You know, Madam Chair, I think that in deference to the author, he should have an opportunity to make an argument for his changes. And so with the chair's indulgence, if I could maintain the opportunity to reintroduce the amendment, depending on what happens, I would withdraw the amendment pending Senator Wieger's amendment and a vetting of that.
Thank you very much, Senator Thompson. I really appreciate that. That makes a lot of sense. So let's review Senator Wieger's amendment, and then we will go back to Senator Thompson's.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would offer the A9 amendment.
Thank you, Senator. The A9 amendment is before us.
And I would ask if Mr. Aronson and Ms. Kirk from MSBA, they prepared the amendment, and it talked about in providing some flexibility in the assignment of some students, and they developed it, and I appreciate that. So I would like to yield to them.
Thank you, Senator Wieger.
No.
If you could please provide the page, if you could provide the amendment to the testifiers.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Roger Ernst, and I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations. We visited with Senator Wieger about this proposed amendment to work what we thought was hand in glove with the proposed increase of the compulsory attendance age to 18. We have obviously some of the students that would be coming back under the raising of that compulsory attendance to age 18, some of them we think should be in an area learning center. And there's always been a natural push and pull on who gets assigned to area learning centers under Minnesota law. But the way the law is structured, just to be short about it, is that the student or the parent has to agree to send the student to an area learning center. If the ALC director and the principal thought that was the appropriate placement for the child, we can't send them there because they're technically a year-round school program. And so what we attempted to do here was to get around that prohibition a bit and to say that under these circumstances, and for kids who were 16 and older, not anyone that's younger than that, in that it does make sense that the parent would have a role, a veto role in that. But that if the principal, the area learning center, and the parent consult, even if the student didn't want to go or the parent said no, but the area learning center and the principal said this is the right placement, we could put the child there. That helps us. It's a small number of cases, but the individual cases on a case-by-case basis are very significant to us. And this raised the comfort level for a lot of the secondary school principals with regard to Senator Wieger's proposal. Madam Chair.
Great. I am so appreciative of this because I think that some of the testimony that we heard during Senator Wieger's presentation from Superintendent Silva was related to kind of cases in which, you know, we behavioral issues, problems could be addressed by the school, and then, you know, that's the group, and then the group that is the more difficult group, how do we go about this? And I think this amendment speaks to that issue about how do we handle children that in effect don't want to be in the school. So that's great. Thank you. Yes.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiwen, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I think our goal is the same in that we want to improve our graduation rates. I mean, I think that's understood. I think that's one of the school board's common drives is they look at the graduation rates and how can they improve those. And I think one of the issues that comes along with this piece that was discussed by the committee was the issue of capacity for school districts. And I think that if you have this and you're required to have these kids are required to be there, really don't want to be there, or the model that's in the traditional high school isn't working for them, and this may be a better approach. I think this is something that provides us a little bit of flexibility. I think, as Mr. Aronson explained, it pushes the issue a little bit and provides districts, administrators, and governing boards a little bit more flexibility in that respect. So we would support that amendment.
Madam Chair, I want to add one thing, though, too. I just want to be
Mr.
clear
Aronson.
To the committee. And there are people who have concerns with this. You know, there are people in ALCs that don't want a lot of assignments there or willy-nilly assignments or that sort of stuff. And I don't want to misrepresent to you that it's all roses on this issue as well. There are people who have some concerns, and we hope to work those out, and at a minimum we get this in here today.
Thank you very much. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, I had a group of students from the Spring Lake Park Area Learning Center, which is within this high school. The Area Learning Center is within the high school. And those young people talked to me about being attending school at that Area Learning Center, and they were so happy to be moved out of the regular system because it just wasn't working for them. And they were showing very much success in that new setting. That might be the opportunity for a child who hates school the way it is in the regular classroom, but would maybe adapt to it in the Area Learning Center. So I think this is a great amendment, and thank you, Senator Weaver.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, in your testimony, you indicated that the parent would hold a veto. They would have to agree, but the language of this amendment doesn't specify that. It requires a consultation, but it doesn't require any agreement. So if that's your intent, you may want to reword the amendment. And then, Senator Weaver, just a question. If I'm understanding how this will interplay with the rest of your language in the bill, there still is a mandatory attendance with your new language. It would still be a mandatory attendance through age 18. However, if there's this consultation and the superintendent decides that attendance should be at an ALC, that's an option. Assuming that that's a correct understanding, then I think you still have the concern that Senator Thompson was getting at, and that 17-year-olds aren't necessarily going to be able to be controlled. But if you'd talk to that a little bit.
Senator Weaver.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Aronson, who I believe drafted it, in terms of the intent. And my intent was to provide flexibility at the local level. And on Senator Nino's point.
Madam Chair, and as Senator Nino raises the question on line 1.5, it says the pupil may be assigned. And I think that may be assigned refers to the district doing the assignment. And so I think that cures that. It's a legitimate question. The other piece is, on a legislative construction, it's a rather obscure prohibition. I mean, you have to work hard to find the prohibition about doing this assignment because it's in the year-round school statute. And we don't want to go in there and try to redo those. If this is the last drafted legislation, this would be the legislative's intent as well. But if it would appear to be a problem, again, this is something we want to work on collaboratively and could fix that in the future if we thought so. But as we were looking at it this morning and visiting with some other council, we don't think it's a problem.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Aronson, and I do appreciate Senator Weaver's efforts. We've sat by each other in the Education Committee and worked on some things, and I appreciate that. I had actually kind of hoped that there would have been some out if a child 17 or 18 was just too difficult to handle. I didn't know what your amendment would be. But my question to you, Mr. Aronson, is still at the end of the day, even with this amendment to Senator Weaver's language, you'd still have 17 and 18-year-old kids that would be subject to the truancy laws, and somebody somewhere, whether in an area learning center or a traditional school setting would be trying to force 17 and 18-year-olds to go to school that don't want to be there. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, that is correct.
Thank you.
Any more questions, Senators? If not, on the... motion to amend the I got lost for a moment.
A9.
But the A9 amendment. But I were we in an amendment to the A9 amendment? No. Sorry. On the A9 amendment, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I voted yes on Senator Weger's amendment because I think if this language does end up getting incorporated and signed into law by the governor, that this does make it better. I agree with that. But it still doesn't solve the ultimate problem, so I would exercise the option you kindly gave me to move my A8 amendment again, and I will do that. And now I guess I can consult with counsel on how to fix the problem that we've now attached this other amendment to the bill. I guess my intent then would be, again, to simply remove this compulsory attendance requirement. And I've already made my arguments. I don't need to say it again.
Thank you. Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and members, if Senator Thompson's A8 amendment is adopted, it takes out the amendment that was in the Uyghur amendment because that actually is in one of the sections that's listed in
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Butler. Appreciate that.
Are members clear, or do you have any questions?
And I request a roll call.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested.
And Madam Chair, and I think we all know who we're going to vote.
But
just a reminder, Minnesota used to have nearly the highest graduation rate in the country, where we would be in the top two or three. I believe Wisconsin is still right there. We've lowered the compulsory attendance age, and now we're right in the middle of the country. And yes, there's a lot of students that may not want to be in school. I just met with the group from Rochester and asked them, do you think this is a good idea? And they said yes. And there's students that may go through a period in their life where they don't want to be in school, but sometimes you need tough love. And, you know, we've debated this. We know how we're going to vote, and have a debate another time.
Thank you.
I need a clarification,
Senator
Madam Chair.
Senator Thompson.
Actually, Senator Carlson raised the question. Maybe you want to raise it. Is this compulsory education is through 18, not up
no.
to up
no.
to 18?
Excuse me. That's the question. Senator Weger.
Yes, there's a question.
If you graduate at 17, but, you know, so you could be, if you graduate or before 18,
Right, but it's graduation or turning 19, whichever comes first.
Yeah.
Or is that wrong?
Senator Weger.
You would need to be in school up until you graduate or up till 18.
Up till 18.
All right. Is that clear, Senator Carlson? Do you still have a question? Senator Carlson, let's make sure we understand this and the staff can help us too. Senator Carlson,
yeah,
your question.
Madam Chair, that was my question, is whether an 18-year-old still is required to go to school, even if they have not graduated. And I guess adding to that, I do have that concern that Senator Thompson has, that there's of the incorrigible that just doesn't work with school, or someone who, I mean, there's lots of other reasons why someone does not want to stay in school, and keeping them in school is not just a punishment to them, it's a punishment to everyone around them. So I have that concern. I'm hoping that we can come up, even if there's something additional that needs to be amended in here, such that they're in that extreme case where someone just doesn't work out in school and is determined not to stay in school while they're 17, that we have an
opportunity. Senators, I want to make sure that you remember that we passed this bill. And this amendment is to delete that language. So going back to doing something that we didn't do when we passed that bill requires an amendment here to that language. We're not going to debate whether we did that language or didn't or was it. So if you wanted to change that provision that we already passed, that is already here, you just need to bring an amendment. So it's done. The language is here. If you have an amendment, bring it now. But the amendment that is before us is that we're going to delete that language, okay? So that's what I want us to focus on, Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I just want to be clear. Unless I'm misreading this, Ms. Butler, I believe it requires attendance through age 18 or until graduation, whichever comes first.
Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's already in the language. What we're going to do here is simply act on the 8 amendment, which will basically just delete the language that we adopted. So that's. So if you have a question about that, questions on what's in the book will require that you go back and just present an idea through an amendment. But the question before you is that you're going to delete the amendment, the language that was introduced in Senate File 978. You will delete it completely. That's, if you have a question about that, please let me know. Senator Johnson.
Two things, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger indicated that he intended for the language to say 17, because that's what I heard him say right now, is that when the child turns 18, then they can legally leave school. That's what I thought you intended.
Senators, I'm going to go back to what I just said. That's already done. If you didn't do that and have questions about what you did a few days ago, you need to bring an amendment. If you want to talk about it, before you is an amendment to delete the language. We need to vote on it. Then if you have questions about that provision that are unclear, you need to talk and come up with an amendment to fix that, because what we did a few days ago was something that is not of your, of yours, that you can't support.
Madam Senator Chair, Johnson. And that was what I was trying to get at. I wouldn't change anything if Senator Wieger said that's what he wanted. I thought he wanted the child to be able to leave school when they reached the age of 18. And if that was so, I would have asked you if you would ask the person who made the motion for adoption of the amendment to pull it back and let Senator Wieger change it to the number 17 here right today.
You can talk about that next.
Okay, mm-hmm. And then, Madam Chair and members, sometimes parents need the support of the legal law, the legalness, to encourage their children that they need to stay in school. Because, I have 4 daughters, and they were quite strong-willed. And there were times when they would challenge me. And I suspect, that there are people around whose kids say, hey, the law says I don't have to go to school. And the parent, in turn, says, you do have to go to school. That is the law. And you could go get picked up for truancy and be sent to jail. And you would have a record on your file at some point. Sometimes parents need that. If it keeps a few children in school and gets them to graduate, I think it's worth it. If a child, they'll run away if they really hate school that much. They'll run away, and then we won't have to deal with them. They'll be gone to another state. I mean that.
Thank you, Senator Clausen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think getting this age situation is really important before we vote. And one question, is this actually the state compulsory education law, what we're looking at right here? Because I think it states children must be in school by the age 7.
This kind of confuses. This is the compulsory instruction age law, and it does whatever the number is in here on page 10. I'm not open to that page. It says right before the 18, the change to 18. What it is. Every child between 7 and center, it says 7 and 16 in current law, and Senator Wiegerstein changed it to 18. So that's right there already in the bill. On page 10, line
24.
Senators, we're going to have get out of the room at 2:30 because there is a committee here at 2:30. I thought we were going to have time until 3. So the first thing that we have to do, because we need to complete our vote on the 8 amendment, which deletes the language that is there. Some of the questions that you have right now are related to the bill that we passed. I wish we have had those questions then, but I understand. So now we have to have those questions, and it's okay. So we can have that conversation after we decide whether or not we actually want this language. I understand Senator Clausen's input here. It says, well, that makes a difference, right, whether or not I want this language or not. So we could do two things. For those of you who are very concerned about the language that is in there and the age and whether or not that is clear or not, you could go back and work on an amendment to actually fix the actual age so that you know what's in this statute before you move into voting into the next thing, which is whether or not you want it in there. Or you can vote on this right now and then go and work on an amendment. Either way, we will entertain both ideas. Senator Thompson.
Well, I think, Ms. Butler, there's no doubt about the meaning of this language, is there? It's compulsory education through age 18.
Senator Butler. Ms. Butler.
Correct, Senator.
Okay, thank you. So that's not in doubt. It's through age 18 or graduation, whichever comes first.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Okay. Are people clear on what is in statute right now?
Could you read it?
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually do have a question that couldn't have been answered in the first hearing because it relates to Senator Wieger's path through the Judiciary Committee. And I just have a. Am I correct in saying that the bill went through that committee?
Ma'am, Senator Wieger.
Chair, Senator Peterson, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay. Well, I'll ask it anyways. Then, have you gotten any counsel considering you have a hearing tomorrow? On the legal ramifications for parents of children between the ages of 16 and 18. Because as I understand it, it's not Senator Johnson referenced the children, but actually truancy laws are enforced against parents, as I understand it. Could you just speak to that and what will be the legal ramifications for those parents in the event that they are truant?
Oh. Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, Senator Pearson, that's what the Judiciary Committee will refer to. I'll reiterate what I had stated, I believe, at another hearing. Ramsey County Attorney John Choi is fully supportive. We're also talking about parental responsibility. And we, you know, there's going to be ramifications. There's tremendous costs, not only to these kids, but to the taxpayers in the probability that they're going to probably need social services, the higher probability for incarceration, et cetera. But we need to get serious about parental responsibility as well. And in terms of the ramifications for truancy, County Attorney Choi, previously, Susan Gertner and Ramsey had testified for it. They have a great program with the St. Paul School District and others. But is there controversy? Yes. I'll point out, we did pass this in a bipartisan fashion, I think it was 4 years ago, and it probably had at least 90 votes in the House and 50 or more in the Senate. But, are these issues concerns? Yes, but I believe we need to do something.
Senator Peterson, Senator Nina.
Just one follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, one of my concerns is not with the merits of kids going to school through 18. One of my real concerns is that the communities that unfortunately disproportionately have high dropout rates also have disproportionately high rates of single motherhood, for example. And that what you're in effect going to be doing is mothers who never authorize their kids not to go to school in the first place, you're going to have ramifications and legal ramifications for a disproportionately high number of single mothers in communities that maybe just don't have the resources to try to do the right thing. And that's one of my concerns, just for the record, is not the merits of having kids in school. It's what are some of these consequences on families that and single parents in particular, that really don't have any choice in the matter.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did talk about that a little bit in the last time this committee saw this bill, and I don't serve on the Judiciary Committee, but I think what Senator Wieger is going to hear is that at age 18, the child has reached the age of majority and the parents would be off the hook, but it's that 17-year that the parents absolutely would be under truancy laws and could be held legally accountable.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger, maybe you said this and I stepped out of the room, but the comments that I got from my school district was that what we all agree, of course, we want all students to graduate and stay in school until they do. But the concern that I heard was that they're having a hard time enforcing truancy laws now up to age 16. So if the child doesn't want to be in school, they're having a very difficult time. In fact, very rarely are they able to enforce those current laws. And so if we expand this to 18, what mechanism is there to allow either the social services or the school district to enforce this now when they're having trouble enforcing it at age 16? So if this goes into effect, what mechanism is there to help enforce that?
Senators, Senator Wieger, feel free to answer. I think you're going to be answering some of these questions tomorrow. We did hear this bill. We spent considerable time. I don't know, if you want to change the bill, you're welcome to offer more amendments. I think that the question before you is, you voted on this bill. This is why it is here. Now there is an amendment that is being presented to get it out. That's what we do. So we have to vote on that. Other things, you may bring an amendment and vote on it, fix it. But the question before you is, do you want to delete this language? So I'm going to move into a vote. All of those in favor of
I requested a roll call.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. The clerk will take the roll.
My amendment, yes.
Senator Torres-Ray.
So the amendment, the question before you is on the 8-8 amendment from Senator Thompson to delete the language that was passed in committee. This is Senate File 978.
Senator Torres-Ray.
No.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Franzen.
No.
Senator Johnson.
No.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Nino.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Rood. Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
No.
Senator Wicklund.
No.
On a 8 yeses and 6 noes, the amendment is adopted. Next, we have about 15 minutes.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to withdraw my A6 amendment.
I'd put that on the record. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, I'd like to offer the A12 amendment. You'll find it fits on page 5 after line 19.
Senator Nelson, would you be so kind and walk us to tell us where in the bill we need to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 5, line 19, it has to do with Senator Claussen's bill, the use of basic skills revenue. Senator Claussen's bill expanded that to be used for programs designed to prepare children and their families for kindergarten, and I think that's a good use of that revenue. But as is a common theme that I think we need to look at is outcomes. We want to make sure that we're getting the outcomes that we're looking for. And so my amendment just asks that the programming is cost-effective, research-based, and includes an evaluation component to measure, record, and publicly report its level of effectiveness. And Madam Chair, I'm wondering if this is language that is similar to language you had in the integration funds bill. I'm thinking it may have been. But the intent is the same, which is we want to make sure that the money is being used in a way that gets us the results that we're looking for, which is children that are prepared and are ready for kindergarten in this case.
Any questions, members, on the amendment?
Madam Chair?
Senator Clausen.
Yes. I view this as a friendly amendment, and because it's going to be left to the individual school districts to make that determination, I could accept this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, I'm just, if you could give me a moment. The research-based piece is kind of an early childhood education. You know, we're moving in that direction to kind of see what it means. It incorporates a restriction, I think, that is something we need to be aware of. But it is it's something that we're striving for. So any questions on the amendment? If not, all of those in favor of the A12 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Who wants to go next? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to offer the A13.
Senator, tell us what page do we need to go to?
Madam Chair, this would add some language on page 58. It's not changing any of the current A3. This is language. This relates back to a discussion that we had on the floor regarding the department and some concerns there are with the implementation of the revised social studies standards and whether the department and the commissioner overstepped their bounds. There was when the commissioner was before this committee at one point, Senator Nelson asked the commissioner a question, I don't recall if it was two or three times, about those actions and whether she was actually changing the benchmarks in these dramatically revised social studies standards, and we could not get a yes or no answer. That is a decision that is now pending in front of an administrative law judge. We were supposed to have a decision by now, but that's been extended towards the end of March sometime. I think it is incumbent on the legislature to aggressively protect its authority. And there are serious questions about whether the department violated the statute that we created that exclusively gave the legislature the authority to make those changes and not the department. And I would hope that we could be very clear that we want to retain that authority that we gave ourselves in law.
Clearly, the department is here. Senator Nino, I think this is really complicated. There is a lot of procedure and time that goes into revising the standards. Changing all of that through an amendment is not a simple thing. It's not a simple conversation. So clearly I oppose this amendment, but I would like to have the department come and talk about really the implications of having kind of a last-minute changing the process to adopt, you know, revise, and I don't know the length of time that has gone into it, changing it into a one-minute conversation. Please. Go ahead and introduce
Madam Chair,
yourself.
Members, Darren Cordy with the Minnesota Department of Education. I know we had a long discussion on this in committee already, so I won't belabor the points that were made at that time. But we, in the social studies standards, have already been adopted. They are, as Representative Senator Nino said, they are sitting with an administrative law judge right now. went through an extensive committee process to create the standards, and there was extensive public testimony and hearings that took place during that time. And to go back and undo all that with this language will have wasted a lot of time and a lot of money. And I don't really think that it's the proper way to go. So, I mean, with that, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah. Well, my throat was getting dry. I hadn't talked for a while. But well, you know, that begs the question.
What's that? Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Help us out. Thought I was helping us out. But anyway, thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I think the question is that, yeah, we spent a lot of money on it, but we shouldn't have, because the statute said you can't change it unless you come to the legislature. And they did not go to the legislature. They started this process to change it, and the only reason they're at the administrative law judge in that process is because the statute conflicts with what they're trying to do. So the statute is very clear. Senator Nelson brought it here. They shouldn't be doing it. They shouldn't have gotten in front of the law judge, and we shouldn't be spending the money on it. So I think that's clear. I'm sorry they spent the money on it. That's one of the problems we have with MDE. They're spending money they shouldn't spend. They should go to classrooms. So this is a very, as the chair pointed out, very complex, very important. And that's why the legislature, back when they developed that statute, said that. They wanted public, they wanted the elected officials who were elected by their by citizens to review that, and the intent was clear. But the MDE went ahead and took it to that point of adjudication. So I support this amendment for that reason. We should not have spent the money. It was wasted. Now we're saying stop.
Thank you, members, on the amendment. All of those in favor of the A13 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No. No.
The amendment is not adopted. Anybody else? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I have the A17 amendment. And it goes on page 58 after line 10. And this will be very familiar to you because we discussed it yesterday in committee, and it was very well received at that time. It's a career and technical education advisory task force doing four things. Improving student outcomes, alignment, better alignment between secondary and post-secondary education, alignment between Minnesota's workforce needs, of course, and education, and then efficiency and cost effectiveness in Minnesota's public secondary and post-secondary schools. This was acted favorably in this committee yesterday. I'd like to get it in the omnibus bill, and there's a second part as well, members, that you aren't familiar with, so I do want to take just a moment and tell you about that. It's the
Senator, before you move, there is a technical issue on this, and that's the reason you don't see it. We did pass it.
Yes.
But in order for us to have it here now, it needs to go to state government and then need to pass there, and it will go then into the final bill. So it is moving, but it's just that you need to go to state government. And it hasn't been scheduled to be heard. So technically, I believe, am I correct, or can we have it here, or why is that?
Yes, we can. We can do anything
technically,
we want.
The bill is in state government right now. This bill is in state government right now.
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you for that clarification. What I'd like to suggest is, because I know we have finance things in our omnibus bill here as well, and I think we're planning to pass that today, and I think some of those don't even have numbers in there. I think they're still blanks. And so I'm wondering if we could, if it were the will of the committee, and it was their will yesterday, to pass this and have it in the omnibus bill. But, of course, if there's a problem with state government or something else at that point, take it out, just because I'm concerned about the timing. And if that would fit, I would like to offer that as an alternative.
Technically, Senator, it's going to be done that way anyway, because it did pass our committee.
Okay.
It's just that it was sent over there. So I don't believe that there is a problem. Or is there? technically having it again, voting again, and just putting it in there?
No.
Could you clarify? Because I'm not
Thank
there.
You, Steve.
So, sorry.
Madam Chair, members, in my history, we've often dual-tracked things, so we would have to respond to whatever state government does
sure.
if they change this, or we'd have to match it up. But I think since it's already going there, that it's probably okay. That I don't believe. I can't
Makes
speak
no
for
difference.
The other chair, but
Madam
they
Chair,
have it
I,
in front of them.
So to the point of the decision that was made, yes, this is part of the omnibus bill. It will go once the state government that makes the decision, then it comes together. If there is any different language, then you need to point to that.
Okay. Yeah. So the different language that I need to point in this amendment.
If you put different language in here, we need to know.
Yes, yes. I would like to mention it. So the first part is what this committee is well aware of. What I would like to direct your attention to is on page 3 of the amendment, which is an advisory task force, which is getting to what we've talked about in this committee even today, which is teacher quality, and trying to get more of the teachers with master's degrees in their content area into their field of licensure. And if you look at Section B, you'll notice that all of those who are involved in teacher preparation and in our education system are listed in there. And I will, Madam Chair, this bill was introduced, but we didn't have time for a hearing in our committee. So it is the first time that the members have seen this language. But I do know that it's a common theme that we've all talked about, which is the importance of teacher quality. And we know that teachers are the number one in-school variable for student achievement. And so the committee has not heard this piece of the amendment, Madam Chair.
So, members, what you have before you is a bill that we already heard and passed. It is in the omnibus bill. You all approved it, but it has an additional piece that you haven't heard and you haven't approved, and that's the other half of it. So these are two different ideas. The first one you did hear, you did pass. The second one you didn't. We didn't have a hearing on it, and now you're asked to vote on both. Senator Chamberlain, Senator Johnson, and then Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, and it's to that point really that you mentioned. I have an appointment up in my office at 2:30, and I'm going to have another one at 2:45. I have to leave. I know this is going to take more than 5 minutes of discussion. And I would really hope that you would wait until we have more time.
Senator Johnson, I would be delighted to give you more time. I'm just going to tell you I'm going to vote no on this. Because
I'm going to vote no.
Don't do those things to the members and to me. When you don't have a hearing, don't attach it to a bill that you already had a hearing and you passed. So I'm encouraging you to stay and vote no. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, to that point, I agree. I mean, we agreed to the first part. You know, we agree to that. But I'm a task force.
I know.
So if we're adding another task force, and we've already heard the first bill, you know, we could do one thing. You know, Senator Nelson, if we could just strike that second page 3, the new section 27, we can put this back in. But I won't support this with the additional task force on there.
Thank you,
Madam
Senator.
Chair,
I really appreciate that.
I will
that.
Accept your friendly amendment and we'll strike the, I think it's page 3
Thank
of
you.
The amendment, and we're back to something the committee is well familiar with.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. I so much appreciate that. So the amendment has been amended to strike the second part of the amendment, which is section 27. All
yes.
of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. And so, Senator Nelson, now you can move your A-17 amendment.
And, Madam Chair, members, I'd like to move the A-17 amendment as amended.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. All of those in favor of the A-17 amendment as it has been amended. Say yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Thank you. The A-17 is adopted. Members, thank you so much. We will convene
Madam
again
Chair.
At 6.
Madam Chair.
Oh, 5:45 p.m. at room 107. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a member of the minority, I'm going to invoke my right to complain about something here.
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead.
End it on a bad note. Madam Chair, I've heard a lot of comments today from the majority and the chairmanship about the fact that somehow amendments are inappropriate or they're gotcha amendments or they shouldn't be offered as amendments. Just to be clear, we don't have any gavels on our side of the aisle, so if you want to give us a gavel for a couple of days, we can hear all the GOP ideas that we want, and if you're okay with that. Other than that, that's really the process. And so oftentimes the only way we get our stuff heard, in fact, almost all the time, is by offering an amendment. I mean, that's what we can do. So I just think it does a disservice to continuously complain about the fact that things are being offered as an amendment when, in fact, it oftentimes is our only ability to make our points heard.
Senator, I hope this is the first time that I said that. So don't say again and again. This is the only time I have said. And I explained very clearly that there was a bill that was introduced for which I had multiple individuals coming to say, please give us the time. We do not have the time today, and I do want you to have that time to talk about it. So I want to be absolutely clear that I am absolutely open. And you see that I have been. There have been some votes that I just really don't appreciate, but I'm open to that. This is the process. But it's not going to be in a fundamental change to legislation in a two-minute amendment. Fundamental change requires time, and it requires work. It's not in a two-minute conversation in through an amendment, Senator. We need to do our work. Senator Clausen.
I was just going to add, Senator Peterson, if you'd stop so many roll call votes, I think we'd appreciate it as well.
That's also a part of the process here.
Your process as well as ours, yes. We know that. Yeah.
Senators, thank you. Please talk to one another. Let the others know about what you plan to do, and you may want to build consensus on those ideas. We will reconvene at 5:45.